Sorry to be the very second best person, but you know, you can ask for a refund.
Brilliant. So I was wondering if you'd just be able to kick us off by telling us a bit about yourself.
Okay, as you can see, I'm very old. I'm married to Rachel. We've got 5 children, the youngest of whom is 21 yesterday, and the eldest of whom, I've got 2 who are married, 1 who's engaged, 1 granddaughter. We live out in the countryside. I've been working in the city for 35 years.
Brilliant. And I've heard you're a Christian, so I was wondering if you've always been one?
I grew up in a church-attending family. I guess I would describe it as middle-classianity. It was what you did if your father enjoyed wearing a tweed jacket, as my father did. We just went along to the local village church every Sunday. But I would say that it meant absolutely nothing to me other than an hour of tedium. On a Sunday, I used to count the hymn numbers and work out what they totaled as my way of getting through the church services as a young person. As a teenager, my mum, who came to faith very shortly before she got married, my mum encouraged me to go on a Christian holiday camp. And there I think I heard the authentic gospel of Jesus Christ for the first time. I'd possibly heard it before, it just had never gone in. And I understood that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. I heard the claims that he had died to deal with my sin. And I understood that if I put my trust in him, I would be forgiven. But I was the most monumentally arrogant young man you will ever have met. I can remember in all seriousness thinking as a 14, 15-year-old that the biggest problem of the world was that no one was as nice as me. Can you imagine that? And so when I heard the message that God loved me enough to die for me because I was a sinner, I thought, well, yeah, that's a message that you guys all need to hear, and that doesn't apply to me, and I don't need that. But I was taken out for a cream tea, actually, by one of the leaders who wanted to find out how I'd been getting on at this Christian holiday camp. And I was monumentally impressed that he was a businessman who'd given up 10 days of his life to come and serve on this holiday camp. I'd assumed he was getting paid for it. I realised ultimately that he wasn't. In fact, he was paying for the privilege of looking after obnoxious 14 and 15-year-olds like me. And I was really impressed. And so when he asked me if I'd ever put my trust in Jesus, I said, I gave him the answer that I knew he wanted to hear. So I said, yes, I had. And he was overwhelmed. He was so excited to hear this. And so he asked me, well, when had this happened? And how had it happened? At which point the lies just multiplied, because I hadn't put my trust in Jesus. But the lies then multiplied, and I got deeper and deeper into trouble as he asked follow-up question after follow-up question, and my lies got ever more brazen. And I guess that night, as a 15-year-old, I had to admit to myself and before God that I was not the nice person that I thought I was, that I was a rebel, that I was someone who needed God's forgiveness. And that was the point at which I put my trust in Jesus. As a still pretty obnoxious 15-year-old.
Thank you for sharing. So that was you as a teenager. Have you had any doubts about Christianity since then?
I guess as a 15-year-old I wasn't very thought through. You'll have gathered I wasn't very thought through at all. I think I started really with some fairly fundamental questions. Like, is it true? It's a reasonably important question. I studied geology and metallurgy at university. You have to deal with some quite important questions that scientific training brings up around historicity and reliability and the way in which one can make sense of the claims of the Bible if one has an inquiring brain. I would say that I dealt with pretty much all of those questions particularly at university, as I thought through some of those key questions. For me, the bigger issues, having thought through some of those real reliability questions, has actually been a question of the moral and my will, and am I prepared to go where the evidence leads? Because at times it's felt inconvenient, and do I really want to go there? I can see where the evidence leads. I can see the implications that it'll have for me and for my life. And am I prepared to go there? So, for instance, I can remember arriving at university as a believer, but also consciously thinking, I'm not sure I want to live as a believer. I think I want to jettison it. I think I want to leave it behind. And here I am, arriving in a new town, anonymous, and I can just quietly get rid of Christianity. Suspend my belief, ignore the evidence, and jettison my faith. Amazingly, God in his kindness sent somebody who I'd never met before in my life to knock on my door that very first evening. Knock, knock. Hello. Hello, you don't know me, but we've got friends in common, and I thought you'd like to know when the Christian meeting is, and I thought you'd like to meet some other Christians. So bang went my chances of sort of quietly sliding into oblivion, and I guess being confronted again with the fact that the evidence for Jesus, his death and his resurrection, I think are overwhelming, and that it has a claim on my life that I can't ignore.
And here you are, 35 years after uni, still a Christian and working in finance. And I was wondering, does your faith in Jesus make any difference to your life day to day? Or do you sort of compartmentalise God time and work time? How does that work for you?
Such a good question. So I think the claims of Jesus are global claims. They're global in the sense that he claims to be Lord of the universe. They're global in the sense that he claims to be Lord over every man and every woman globally. They're global in the sense that he claims authority over every aspect of my life. And therefore, I need to live with him as my Lord and my Saviour, not just every bit other than 9 to 5, if only it were 9 to 5, but including the 9 to 5. And that therefore means that how I conduct myself at work is a matter of great significance and importance, both in terms of seeking to live in a way that brings honour rather than dishonour to him, but also in terms of seeing my time at work as an opportunity to speak of Jesus and point people towards him. And so my hope and my prayer as I come to work each day is that God will give me opportunities to do that. And I guess my hope and my prayer is that I will recognize daily that there is more to life than life, and that there is more to being in this world than being an employee or a worker, and that ultimately the only thing that will last is eternity. And the good news is that Jesus has given me the keys to eternity. The only question is, will I be living for Jesus when he says, your time is done, Simon? Will I be, as the Bible puts it, building up things that will last through death? And so, yeah, my prayer is that, whether at work or at home, I'm seeking to live for Jesus in all the different things that I'm doing.
Thank you very much. It's interesting how you mentioned the keys to heaven. If you were to die tonight, I hope you don't, what would you say to God to sort of, I guess, justify yourself before him? Or, yeah, on what grounds do you think that you would have these keys?
So if God were to ask me, as I think one day he will, why should I let you into my heaven? The answer needs to be very, very different from the answer that I would have given as a 14-year-old. As a 14-year-old, I might have said, because I'm such a great guy, God, you really need me. But the reality is I'm not. The reality is that I am a failure. I seek to live for God, but I fail. I want to honour him, but I constantly muck up. And so if my answer is anything to do with how I've lived, or anything to do with the church attendance that I have, or my gifts, if it's anything to do with me, the answer is going to be because I cannot reach God's standards. So the only answer I can give to God is I don't deserve to be in heaven. I have not met the standard, but I know a man who has. My trust is in Jesus and what he has done for me, because Jesus, as God's son, lived the perfect life and always obeyed God, the Father, and has lived up to the standards that God would want of me, but that I cannot keep. And all I have to do is put my trust in him and in the forgiveness that his death on the cross has earned me, and in the quality of his life that I can never attain to, but that he offers me. He offers me an exchange. And my filthy, inadequate life in exchange for his perfect and glorious life. So I get to plead the merits of his brilliance, and he gets to take the filth of my life. He paid the penalty in my place. He died on the cross for me. So I get his righteous deeds. And God looks on me and says, you'll do. Not because of what I've done, but because of what Jesus has done.
Wow. I was wondering if you might be able to elaborate for us a little bit on that. Maybe showing us a verse in the Mark's Gospels we've got on the tables to see where that's from. I'm just going to grab one.
Cool. So my favourite verse in all the Bible is found in Mark chapter 10 and verse 45. And I haven't got my glasses, so I can't read it. You're going to give us a page.
Yeah, page 30.
And I think it says something like this. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and give his life as a ransom for many. Is that about right?
Yeah.
For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and give his life as a ransom of many. So what's just been happening is that the disciples have been having a barney amongst themselves about which of them is the greatest. And they're very like me, in that one of them thinks that they're better than all the others, and the others are strangely narked at that, because they're pretty convinced that in fact they're better than the one who's just claimed to be the best. And Jesus says, look, you've got it all the wrong way around. You're not here to have people serve you. You're not here to lord it over them. You're here to serve. And in fact, I, Jesus, the Son of Man, I am the one who's come to serve. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. So God steps out of his heaven, comes down to earth. Why did he come to earth? In order to be served? No, in order to serve. How did Jesus serve? by giving his life. What was the point of giving your life? I mean, that's a pretty big way of serving, as a ransom for many. What is a ransom? A ransom is a payment that you make in order to buy someone back. If I were to kidnap Julia, I might go to her parents and say, you can have her back on the payment of a ransom. What would you be willing to pay Julia's parents?
£5.
£5. I think I'd ask for more than that. What does it cost to buy me back? The answer is a life. A life for a life. What did Jesus give? He gave his life for me. Not just for me, actually, did you notice? He gave his life as a ransom for many. He gave his life in order that the many can come back to God. The many who have rebelled against God and who deserve his condemnation, he gave his life. That's how he served. And now actually, that then colours everything. It means that God has shown his love in Jesus. Doesn't that make you want to love him back? It shows that I have incredible worth. God was willing to send his son to die for me. He loves me that much. I have that much value in his sight that he was willing that his son should die in my place. But it also then colours how I then live. So I'm here to serve. How do I serve people? Well, I could sit back in the office, put my feet up, and call my colleagues to wait on me. Actually, we don't do that anymore in the office, do we? But we've all had bosses who are people who basically are there to have us run around them. Now, I am the boss at work, but I hope that I serve my people by seeking to, well, I'm there to help them do their job. I'm there to serve them in that sense. But actually the biggest and best way in which I can serve someone is by telling them about Jesus, which is why every day I pray that God will give me opportunity to do that. Now I need to pray and wait for those opportunities and not take advantage of them in an inappropriate way. But I want people to know about the Lord Jesus and his love for them and how he's died for them, how he's given himself as a ransom to buy them back.